The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from a Facebook post by the North Carolina Reading Service, a Garner Lions Club chicken dinner on January 7th. From Facebook, from the NOPBC, Iowa Department for the Blind is recruiting a Braille reading young adult panel for a February 27th session. From Tweaktown, significant bionic eye breakthrough. From Mobile Syrup, Canadian develops accessible apps. From Bleeping Computer, three articles. Apple Fix for an OS flaw, Windows and Blister malware, Redline malware stole more data, and from the British Journal of Ophthalmology, an abstract of a study that they've done on the incidence and possible increase of blindness in infants and young children. So let's get started. Posted December 27th, 28th by the North Carolina Reading Service. Join the Garner Lions Club on Friday, January 7th for a chicken pastry dinner. The cost is $10 per plate and advance tickets are preferred. Either eat-in or take-out services are available. It will be held at the Lions Club building at 305 West Main Street, Garner. For more information and to purchase tickets, call Lion Gloria English at 919-772-4285 or Lion Bill McClure at 919-779-1755. Posted Thursday on the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children Facebook group by Kayla Weathers. Hi, I'm in search of students who are Braille readers ages 14 to 22 who would be interested to speak on a panel conducted via Zoom for a youth weekend retreat hosted by the Iowa Department for the Blind on February 27th. There will be 2 one-hour sessions from 9 to 10 a.m. and 10 to 11 Central Standard Time, which will be separated by maturity level. Students would be asked to talk about how they use Braille in their daily lives and their experiences learning it. It would be great to have some dual media readers on the panel. Students can be lifelong Braille users or in the process of learning it. If any of your young adults are interested, please send their names, ages, home state, and how long they have been a Braille user to Terry, T-E-R-I, dot Wilcox, W-I-L-C-O-X, at blind.state.ia.us. From tweaktown.com, significant breakthrough in bionic eye development. Researchers have made a breakthrough in bionic eye technology, reducing power consumption to facilitate next-gen visual systems, article by Adam Hunt, published December 23rd. Researchers from the Harbin Institute of Technology in China, the Harbin Institute, and Northumbria University have developed new technology to make bionic eyes more efficient. The team developed a new method for controlling the artificial synapses in bionic retinas, improving electrical conductivity and reducing power consumption. They achieved this by injecting indium, a soft metal element, into a two-dimensional molybdenum disulfide material, M-O-L-Y-B-D-E-N-U-M, disulfide. When tested within an electronic retina, the artificial optical synapses produce the high-quality images required for a bionic eye. Bionic eyes work within existing eye structures and connections to the brain and are designed to return visual function to the patient instead of purely cosmetic replacements. Some bionic eye implants are available currently, but are only suitable for cases of blindness resulting from certain eye diseases. You can read more from the team paper on the new technology published in Advanced Materials at the hot link on the website. A quote from the extracted from the paper reads, "The current visual systems are based on physically separated sensors, memories, and processing units. These systems often have high power consumption and difficulties of performing complex image learning and processing tasks. Therefore, our newly developed method is of great significance for the next generation artificial visual systems, said Professor Richard Fu of Northumbria University. From MobileSyrup.com, Legally Blind Canadian Using Electronic Glasses to Develop More Accessible Apps. 39-year-old Jacqueline Pope, J-A-C-L-Y-N, of Oshawa, Ontario, wants to make the kinds of apps for others that have been lacking in her own life. Posted December 9th. It's not uncommon for someone to pursue a second career later in their life, whether it's because they're not happy in their current field or simply were inspired to try something different. For 39-year-old Jacqueline Pope of Oshawa, Ontario, the goal now is to become a full-stack developer to make apps more accessible for the blind and visually impaired. But unlike most people, circumstances completely out of her control led her to this point. In 2019, after 3 years of gradual sight loss, Pope was diagnosed as legally blind with all four of the leading causes of blindness in Canada: macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, and cataracts. When I started losing my sight, I was really, really lost, says Pope, who had previously been going to school for environmental engineering. Beyond the general day-to-day challenges that come with vision loss, she says her conditions, which have removed much of her sight, prevent her from properly treating her diabetes. How do I poke my finger and check my numbers if I can't see the pump and it doesn't talk to me? She explains. How do I check my blood pressure if the blood pressure machine doesn't talk to me and there's nobody around to help me? I was a single mom. How am I supposed to do these things? As Pope tells it, the medical devices she commonly uses are designed for people with sight. Basic features, such as compatibility with virtual assistants like Siri and Alexa, can go a long way toward helping the blind and visually impaired. I've got doctors yelling at me, do this, do this, do this, do that. But none of these things, these medical devices, are actually accessible to me. I still have an endocrinologist who's going, I don't think you're actually giving yourself the right amount of insulin every day. Probably not. I can't see it. I'm doing the best I can. Eventually, the endocrinologist put her in contact with the company that made her insulin pump. When she raised her concerns, she says the company told her it was not financially feasible to make its product more accessible in the way she was asking. That drove me nuts, she admits. And that's what led me to learn how to read source code. You can read the source code on everything. Even right now, I can just right-click on something and it'll tell me the source code of what's going on. And if you can read that stuff, it's usually a 0 or a 1, a true or a false, or a yes or a no. Are you telling me it's too expensive to get somebody to copy a line of code to make it speak to Apple or Siri or Bixby or Alexa? It's too expensive? Come on, that's absolutely ridiculous. From there, Pope decided enough was enough. As companies fail to become more accessible, she was going to do her part to make it so. Pope has enrolled in the UX/UI design program at the University of Toronto's continuing education program for coding, harnessing a wearable medical device to achieve her goal. Thankfully, she's not alone in her pursuit. Through the Canadian National Institute for Blindness's CNIB scholarship program, Pope has been awarded the eSight 4, a wearable medical device developed by Toronto-based eSight. The organization was founded in 2006 by Canadian electrical engineer Conrad Lewis, who wanted to develop technologies that could aid his two legally blind sisters. In practice, the eSight is a cutting-edge camera that leverages high-resolution screens and algorithms to provide increased visual information to the brain. The device that we have now is really suited for today's environment, especially for people who are tech-savvy like Jacqueline, says Yuval Zilberberg, eSight's manager of client success and customer relationship management. A lot of people use their iPhones and our device is a connected device, so you're able to see what's going on in the eSight. So you can actually share the image that is on the screen on an iPhone or vice versa. You can see what's on your iPhone in the screens of the eSight device. For those of us who grew up playing video games and had the map in the top left corner, it's kind of like wearing the eSight device when you don't have it all the way down. It's still sitting there, so it's like that little map, but then you can still see the real world right there. It's the best way I can describe it, explains Pope with a laugh. In using the eSight like this, she can have screens from other devices, like a computer or phone, open and ready to use. This is how she's able to work on coding projects as well as manage her online business, Sewing in the Dark. There's a hot link for that. But it's also made a huge difference in her personal life. I think from the first time I put it on, I saw my son's face for the first time in 4 years. From 16 going to 20, you can imagine there was quite a difference. And I cried, she says. I couldn't believe how much my baby had grown. Like there's one thing on your mind. He's growing up, he's there, and I'd been fighting for so long for everything, for everybody in the community. I hadn't realized how much I had actually missed, how much I had lost. Pope notes it really became apparent how much she had missed out on when her brother took her to an evening NASCAR race. With the eSight, she could make out so much more of the race than she would have been able to before. Previous to that, the best way to explain it was that some of the cars had fluorescent numbers on them, and that's all I could see. There was no car. It was just fluorescent numbers that were going around, Pope explains. When I put the eSight on, it was like the whole picture was painted. I could see everything again. I could even see the sponsors on the board. I could see who was leading in the race. I could pick people out in the stands. I was crying. Beyond that, she credits the eSight for allowing her to properly race a car of her own in a video game, go for hikes with her dog Luna, and cook without fear of cutting her hands. Zilberberg says the device would have also made a big difference in his own life were it available during his childhood. My dad has Stargardt's, a form of macular degeneration causing central vision loss. I wish he would have had the eSight. Back when I was younger, playing hockey, it would have been really great for him to have that device, because while I remember seeing him there, and it was great to have him at my hockey game supporting me, he wasn't watching the game, right? He explains. At my older age now, I can kind of give a tip of the hat on that, but now with the eSight, that's something that would have changed it for him. He would have been able to watch the game, be closer to what was going on at that time, but unfortunately, he had to miss that. Making technology more accessible. Beyond medical devices like her insulin pump lacking voice assistant functionality, Pope identifies several other common shortcomings of modern apps that she'd like to fix. Firstly, she notes that the World Wide Web Consortium, W3C, the group that develops international standards for the web, needs to expand its guidelines. The W3C guidelines are only for websites and browsers. There are no guidelines for mobile apps, period, she says. So that's the number one thing that needs to be fixed. You know, if we're going to create something, why don't we have some guidelines? She says doing this would help prevent situations where Band-Aids on top of Band-Aids on top of Band-Aids on top of Band-Aids are being put onto apps because accessibility wasn't considered from the start. If everything starts from HTML, CSS, why wouldn't you make it accessible right from the beginning and make it responsive right from the beginning instead of adding in all these flashing doodads, she says. I'm tired of going into apps from the navigation bar just because my Apple phone has set the text so it's bigger so that when the text messages come in from my kids, I can read them. Now the navigation bar on the bottom of that app no longer lines up with the buttons. So the button is way over here when navigation is way down there. That shouldn't happen just because I wanted to increase the size of my font within my actual phone. So these are little things that just should not be happening. Pope says this lack of accessibility extends to the technology that is found in schools. 4 schools have told me they cannot meet my accommodation requests, with the 4th school following up to say they wouldn't even know how to deal with somebody who was blind, she says. I'm just trying to do coding, and I didn't realize that it was such a barrier. It's in front of me. It's words I can learn on my own. I have been learning on my own, and I'm trying to get a teacher to teach me, but I can't seem to get an administrator to say, yes, let her into the school. I've had full funding opportunities 4 times, and 4 times schools have blocked me. I've had to turn down those funding opportunities for school. She says that even though she has technical skills, schools regularly will not recognize them. I have these schools blocking me for these pieces of paper of certification that says, yes, you can do those skills, same as a carpenter or somebody who went to learn how to make furnaces or whatever else. But because I can't get that piece of paper that says I know Java or HTML or Python or whatever, I can't get my pay rate to get off of ODSP, Ontario Disability Support Program. Apparently, it's politically correct to tell me to go sit in the dark, and I don't think that's right. I think that's really, really wrong. Fighting misconceptions. There is a chart of the number of people with visual loss by province and territory in Canada as of 2019. In addition to inaccessible technologies, Pope says there's a general misunderstanding of blindness and the obstacles that those with vision loss typically encounter. According to the Canadian Council of the Blind, CCB, an estimated 1.5 million Canadians identify themselves as having any kind of sight loss, with 5.59 million others carrying an eye disease that could impair vision. That said, the ways in which vision loss can manifest can vary. Per the CNIB, a common misconception is that people who are blind have no sight whatsoever. However, the Institute notes that blindness comes in many forms. People may experience anything from high light sensitivity and reduced depth perception to blind spots or minimal peripheral vision. Pope says she regularly encounters those who don't understand her needs or often even try to. People assume I'm completely blind, but I'm not completely blind, she says. I have little spots. I call them my HD spots. And I look through them because I have so many different diseases, so I'm losing my vision in so many different ways. She says people often imagine a blind person looks a certain way when that's not always the case. If I'm in a store and wear regular glasses, I'm told that I don't look blind. But what does that look like? That's what I want to know. I can put my regular glasses on now. They'll look perfectly fine, and nobody says anything to me, she says. But if I have Luna with me, all of a sudden I'm told, are you training that dog? No, I'm not training that dog. She's there to help me. It gets frustrating. When the pandemic hit, the employment support group Make a Change Canada gave Pope a grant to turn her office into a fully accessible space. When she went to a Staples to purchase supplies, the store manager yelled at her for not adhering to the markers on the ground to stay 6 feet apart. Pope, of course, couldn't properly see them. But she says the manager didn't believe her even though she had her black glasses on and a guide dog. When she sought out another employee, she says she faced even more resistance. I remember asking for help, and the person who came over was too afraid to even speak to me. It was almost like I made them sick or something. A similar situation has happened at a Supercenter location when she asked an associate to get her a smaller cart, since the big ones scare Luna. The guy looks at me as if something's wrong with me and says, no, I can't do that. But you're the actual cart handler, dude. Why can't you do that? Why can't you understand a small cart, just that one little thing, would make my life easier? Shannon Simpson, CNIB's Director of Marketing and Communications, adds that corporations often have their own misconceptions about disabilities. They often think creating an accessible workplace is costly. It isn't, she explains. As the CNIB notes, some simple ways businesses can become more accessible are by offering software programs that read information aloud, providing screen magnifiers to more prominently display text, keeping common spaces like hallways obstacle-free, or even adding lighting to a room. If you're not using these technologies, how can you implement them and use them if you have no idea what it's like? To help with this, Simpson says companies should look to the Accessible Canada Act, which was introduced at the federal level in June 2019 to make Canada barrier-free by 2040. While society continues to create barriers to inclusion for people who are blind or partially sighted, there has never been a better opportunity for government or corporations to further improve accessibility for people with disabilities, she says. This framework is a great place for provincial governments without accessibility legislation to start developing their own. But Pope says the easiest way to do this is to regularly consult and involve members of the accessibility community. If you're not using those technologies, how can you implement them? So why wouldn't you speak to the community? Why wouldn't you put money into the community when we're the ones who are using these devices and accessible technologies all the time? Doing so, Pope says, might help prevent old-fashioned hiring practices that make it difficult for someone who's blind or visually impaired to get a job, even if they might be otherwise qualified. If you look at Procter & Gamble, in their very first level of hiring, you have to go through a computer-orientated hiring system, and they'll actually have little aliens flying up in the top right corner, and you have to count them. How is that fair to somebody who's visually impaired? She says, they might be able to do that job 100%, but if they can't count those stupid aliens, which has nothing to do with their job, why are they being denied? Why are we putting these restrictions in front of people? That's what makes me so mad. She notes these kinds of barriers can feel demoralizing, and she's even been discouraged by those in the disabled community to pursue coding or other ventures. After all of what I've gone through, to be told in my community it's okay to just sit there and stop trying, what's the point? These are people within the blind community or disabled community, she explains. Why push yourself even harder? Why have the headaches? Why have the migraines? Why even keep fighting for these things? When a community becomes complacent and they no longer want to try, isn't that a sign that something is seriously wrong here? She says she won't let any of that deter her. I think we're behind the times, and I think people are afraid, and I think enough is enough. I have no problem standing up and screaming, hey, let's go, come on, let's make a change, says Pope. And I'm just looking for people to back me behind that, so that I don't think I'm crazy. Because when I'm told to sit on the couch and sit in the dark, be quiet, be complacent, and sit on the shelf and do nothing, that's when there's something wrong. That's when we should all be standing up. More information about blindness and visual impairments can be found on cnib.ca and fightingblindness.ca. There is a correction posted on December 14th. This story originally attributed a common misconception is that people who are blind have no sight whatsoever came from the Canadian Council of the Blind. However, it should say Canadian National Institute for the Blind, CNIB. The story has been updated accordingly. From BleepingComputer.com, Apple fixes macOS security flaw behind gatekeeper bypass. Article by Sergiu Gatlan, Sergiu Gatlan. Apple has addressed a macOS vulnerability that unsigned and unnotarized script-based apps could exploit to bypass all macOS security protection mechanisms, even on fully patched systems. If they circumvent automated notarization security checks, which scans for malicious components and code signing issues, the applications are allowed to launch by Gatekeeper, a macOS security feature designed to verify if downloaded apps are notarized and developer signed. One malicious script-based app targeting the bypass flaw, CVE-2021-30853, are launched on a target system. They can be used by attackers to download and deploy second-stage malicious payloads. Apple addressed this vulnerability in Mac OS 11.6 through a security update released in September 2021 that adds improved checks. Gatekeeper bypass with a shebang. The CVE-2021-30853 Gatekeeper bypass bug was discovered and reported to Apple by Box Offensive security engineer Gordon Long. He found that specially crafted script-based applications downloaded from the Internet would launch without showing an alert, even though automatically quarantined. The specially crafted part requires creating an app that uses a script starting with a shebang. That's an exclamation point with a hashtag. Character, but leaving the rest of the line empty, which tells the Unix shell to run the script without specifying a shell command interpreter. This leads to a gatekeeper bypass because the syspolicy D daemon automatically commonly invoked by the Apple System Policy Kernel extension to perform security checks, signing, and notarization no longer gets triggered for inspection when launching a script without specifying an interpreter. Basically, if the script used the shebang but did not explicitly specify an interpreter, it would bypass gatekeeper security checks. The syspolicy D daemon will perform various policy checks and ultimately prevent the execution of untrusted applications, such as those that are unsigned or unnotarized, explained security researcher Patrick Wardle, W-A-R-D-L-E. But what if the Apple System Policy KEXT decides that the syspolicy D daemon does not need to be evoked? Well, then, the process is allowed, and if this decision is made incorrectly, then you have a lovely file quarantine, gatekeeper, and notarization bypass. As revealed by Wardle, threat actors can exploit this flaw by tricking their targets into opening a malicious app that can also be camouflaged as a benign-looking PDF document. Such malicious payloads can be delivered on target systems via many methods, including poisoned search results, fake updates, and trojaned applications downloaded from sites linking to pirated software. Similar bugs exploited by malware. This is not the first macOS bug fixed by Apple that would enable threat actors to completely circumvent OS security mechanisms, such as Gatekeeper and File Quarantine, on fully patched Macs. In April, Apple patched a zero-day vulnerability exploited in the wild by Schlayer malware operators to bypass macOS automated security checks and deploy additional payloads on compromised Macs. The Schlayer threat actors began targeting macOS users with unsigned and unauthorized malware that exploited the zero-day bug, tracked as CVE-2021-30657, starting with January 2021, as the JMF Protect Detection Team discovered. Microsoft also discovered a macOS vulnerability in October, dubbed Shrootless and tracked as CVE-2021-30892, that could be used to bypass System Integrity Protection, SIP, and perform arbitrary operations, elevate privileges to root, and install rootkits on compromised devices. A malicious application may be able to modify protected parts of the file system, Apple said, in a security advisory issued after patching the Shrootless bug. There are related articles with hot links listed at the bottom. Also on Bleeping Computer, stealthy blister malware slips in unnoticed on Windows systems. Article by Ionut Iliascu, Ionutilascu. Security researchers have uncovered a malicious campaign that relies on a valid code signing certificate to disguise malicious code as legitimate executables. One of the payloads that the researchers called Blister acts as a loader for other malware and appears to be a novel threat that enjoys a low detection rate. The threat actor behind Blister has been relying on multiple techniques to keep their attacks under the radar, the use of code signing certificates being only one of their tricks. Signed, sealed, delivered. Whoever is behind Blister malware has been running campaigns for at least 3 months, since at least September 15th, security researchers from Elastic Search Company found. The threat actor used a code signing certificate that is valid from August 23rd, though. It was issued by digital identity provider Sectigo for a company called Blist LLC with an email address from a Russian provider, mail.ru. Using valid certificates to sign malware is an old trick that threat actors learned years ago. Back then, they used to steal certificates from legitimate companies. These days, threat actors request a valid cert using details of a firm they compromised or of a front business. In a blog post this week, Elastic says that they responsibly reported the abused certificate to Sectigo so it could be revoked. The researchers say that the threat actor relied on multiple techniques to keep the attack undetected. One method was to embed Blister malware into a legitimate library, for example, colorui.dll. The malware is then executed with elevated privileges via the run dll32 command. I ran out of time for that and the other Bleeping Computer article. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.